Okay, we are now going to go to number 12, 24133, in regards to Julianne Miller, DBM.
Case 24133, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and respondent is Julianne Miller, DBM. At the April 17, 2024 Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened investigation regarding respondent's conduct as responsible veterinarian for the premises with respect to the care and treatment of Buddy Mounts, a 12-year-old male Labrador owned by Sandra Mounts. After reviewing case 2445 regarding Dr. McEnany, the board expressed concerns with respect to the hospital policies and procedures regarding monitoring the hospital of hospitalized patients and chronic communication. The board expressed concerns with the following: inadequate monitoring of the dog after Dr. McEnany left the premises, no clear transfer of the case or who was in charge of overseeing the pet's care overnight, failure to communicate the dog's declining condition overnight to the pet owner, gaps in monitoring, incomplete medical records with respect to the treatment sheets and CPR documentation, and inaccurate information entered into the pet owner's termination letter. In this case, did not go before the investigative committee was brought back to you for your review and consideration.
Great. Thank you, Tracy. We have Ms. Sandra is here again with us, and we do have Dr. Miller present. You would like to come forward? Thank you for being here.
Good morning, thank you.
Give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Yes, thank you for listening, and I appreciate the time to go over our policies. I know sometimes it's hard to understand from the medical record what is actually happening in practice. I would like to say that this, when reviewing this case, unfortunately our communication was not the greatest, and we recognize that and work on that. However, the medical care was the best that we could provide. As far as inadequate monitoring of the dog, so we have a technician who's on all night monitoring these animals. We have a very state-of-the-art ICU unit. They're in that unit with that animal all night long, monitoring them. And unfortunately, if it's not on the treatment sheet, it doesn't get documented. It does not mean that animal's not monitored. So that animal was monitored all night long. The animal did present at midnight. Immediately, an hour later, had a seizure. Dr. McEnany was still in the building, contacted the owner, and from 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock when the morning doctor came in, remained unchanged. So I think there was a misunderstanding that that animal decompensated after that 1 o'clock seizure. In fact, that animal stayed about the same. So no clear transfer of the case. Our policy is that the veterinarian on that case at night stays on that case until transferred in the morning. So McEnany was the responsible veterinarian. They are responsible for coming back into the clinic as need be, supporting that technician at night, and staying as needed for the animal. Failure to communicate the dog's declining condition. The owner was called at 1:30 when the animal had a seizure. I do recognize that McEnany didn't describe the blood work to the owner, and I'm sorry about that. I believe that if she had and she had used different wording, perhaps this we would not be here. Giving the owner a chance to make different decisions for that animal or go a different way. It does not reflect the medical care of that animal. It reflects a miscommunication with the owner. Gaps in monitoring the dog. There were no gaps. If you look at the records, the dog was monitored the whole time. It may not be written down every minute that that technician's watching that animal, but it is being monitored the entire night. So, and then incomplete medical records. I'm not sure if she provided the CPR documentation and treatment sheet, but I provided it with my package. So I'm not sure if that was the answer to that question. I did provide all that documentation. And then the termination letter, unfortunately, looking back at that, my hospital director did make some mistakes with that letter. And I hope my response answered those mistakes. We were in reference to the animals that this owner still owns, that we would no longer be seeing those animals. And it was in response to their negative and pretty vicious online bullying that we received from this case after spending hours of time responding and being transparent and trying to be as open as possible about Buddy's case. We felt that we were not receiving the respect and consideration that we needed, and felt that we needed to terminate the relationship to protect our staff and our practice. So unfortunately, looking back, we do watch and monitor and audit all our doctors. We have 8 doctors, and communication is always the problem. And I think if we can improve our communication, and I'm very sad that Buddy died. He died within 10 hours of coming to our practice, very sick. Don't know why. Did the best we could within the confines of what we could provide, and I'm very sorry that he passed, and I'm sorry that it got to this point.
Okay, thank you. You can go ahead and step back.
Okay.
And Sandra, I'm happy to give you time to speak again.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
When she states that the next doctor had come in at 7 a.m., my question is where was the communication when, per the notes, it stated that at 6 a.m. that they'd noticed that they weren't able to give him his medications because he was unable to swallow. I've been told by previous employees and even patients that a lot of their vets basically state, do not call me after I leave. The next tech or vet can handle it in the morning. There was a huge lack of disrespect from Eric Pellows. When I did request a meeting with her, instead of asking for Dr. Miller, Dr. Sullivan came. Erica did the majority of the talking. Was very rude. There was zero compassion with her whatsoever. Like I stated before, they immediately removed me from the patient records, from social media. The only thing that was stated was somebody had said, hey, what's your experience? And I just said, make sure that your pet is being monitored, which I don't think that was bullying as is being stated. My other question is, I know that in Arizona, the techs are not required to be certified, licensed, so there's no true accountability. So my question is when, who does the training, if they're an assistant, to go to vet tech? Are there any tests to show that they're actually qualified to take care of these animals overnight? There was just a huge lack of communication. I just feel if they'd actually monitored him like they should have. Where was the notes from the vet that came in at 7 o'clock? If he was still in the same condition as I had left him, there's still something missing, because at 6 o'clock they're saying that he was unable to swallow. Was that from the Dex that was given to him all night long, putting him basically in a sedation the entire time? I don't know, because again, I'm not getting your answers, and I need closure for my boy. So, thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. Okay, Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this case.
Okay, this case involves another case, 2445, which has been pendent. So this issue that we're talking about right now involves this respondent as the responsible veterinarian in this case. And so in the discussion on 2445, came up where there was concerns by the board, and I believe for the most of the information we received from the respondent, very thorough and very complete. But just briefly go through the board's concerns and the response. The inadequate monitoring of the dog after Dr. McEnany left the premises at 2:30 a.m. And as we've heard how this hospital works, from the 12 p.m. To the 7 a.m., this is a technician. Owners are informed of the policy. It's on the paperwork. The technician was responding to the doctor's orders. There was some charting issues that should have been more complete. I think the respondent has, and the respondent in Dr. McEnany have said there should have been more orders and charting done. Maybe there's a better policy there in terms of the record keeping, so we don't have this appearance of lack of monitoring. The material that we got from the respondent and from the TAC clarifies the overnight monitoring for me, the patient, and information we've received from Dr. McEnany takes responsibility for not ordering more frequent checks. The second issue, no clear transfer of the case to a veterinarian or who is in charge of overseeing the pet's overnight care. As we've learned, there's a specific policy in this hospital in place regarding the transfer of a case the next morning. And as the respondent states and Dr. McEnany states, that this policy was not followed. Again, the hospital policy is for the technician to monitor, and a complaint was aware of this policy. So there's a problem there. Does not appear to be under the responsibility of the respondent in this case. The failure to communicate the dog's declining condition overnight to the pet owner, that's the crux of this whole case. This patient, as we discussed in the other case, with an extremely grave prognosis, and that information was not communicated to the complainant. And perhaps if it had been, the outcome would have been much different and we wouldn't be here. There was communication in the morning by a technician. However, as the respondent states, it's not the best policy. It would have been better to be performed by a doctor, but we didn't have proper transfer of the case, so that didn't occur. And then the gaps in the monitoring of the dog, we've covered that. How this hospital handles that procedure. Maybe it could have been better in terms of charting or notations. And again, Dr. McEnany takes responsibility for not ordering more frequent documentation of TPRs, et cetera. The respondent stated that she would have recommended communication with the complainant as to the critical nature of the patient. That's what we're talking about here, and that didn't happen. Financial constraints, that are always an issue. There's always a discussion. Again, that revolves around communication. As to the incomplete medical records with respect to the treatment sheet and the CPR, I believe we have that now. And this issue of the inaccurate information entered into the termination letter, I think we have an explanation of that now. It's unfortunate. There were a few mistakes made. I don't believe there was intent at retribution or anything like that. It's unfortunate that this occurred. But I think we have an adequate explanation of that. And as far as this rising to the level of being below a standard of practice as to the responsible veterinarian, I just don't see that. This is a communication case, but I think it mostly revolves around the pending case. And so in this case, which is, 24133? Is that what it is? Yeah, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
I just wanted to add one thing. I just putting this out there, but I read the social media posts, and unless I'm missing something, I did not actually believe they were that. I know you have the absolute right to terminate a patient for, you know, whatever mm-hmm. reason, but I did not see anything that was really
see that
over the top.
Over the top.
Certainly, yeah. I've seen far worse. That's why yeah. I don't have social media, though.
Right.
I just wanted to put that out there because
I would agree with something that. I don't think that was.
And also, as a I'm not the vet on the board, but this whole transfer is so mm-hmm. interesting to me because yeah. if she left Dr. McKinney at 2:30 in right. the morning, she was clearly not coming back at the 7:30 shift. Mm-hmm. Why? I mean, I don't understand that there has to be this formal, like, okay, now how is it not just automatically
transferred to whoever is coming.
Well, because I believe the hospital policy is that by text, by phone call, or whatever, that the initial veterinarian provides the next veterinarian with her assessment. They just don't go by notes.
Otherwise,
and that's a good policy.
Okay. That's otherwise, then it's like if anything happens with this patient, that doctor is coming back in to care for that patient, even if they...
Before the 7 a.m., definitely. Okay. After the 7 a.m., if we had had proper transfer of the case, it wouldn't okay. be an issue. So before 7 a.m., yes, but okay. I don't believe they're saying, if I understand correctly, that the initial vet has to come back the next day.
Okay.
Just transfer
they
that
just
case.
They have to transfer it. Okay.
And they
again,
don't...
not in the practice. I just would have thought it
Well, they don't
kind of...
feel that notes are sufficient, and
okay.
so they want a formal transfer. I think that's probably pretty good policy.
Okay.
Especially in this case, where we've got a period where it's a technician.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But I agree, it sounds like Dr. McCanny is taking responsibility for the
right, and that's,
transfer and all that. So,
right.
so yeah, I agree that this case could be dismissed. But did I, is there a second or any other
second.
Further discussion? Okay.
I do have
sure.
a point of information for discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned about a lack of documentation of the monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a policy, we have the saying, if it's not in medical records, it didn't happen. So I think that is something that ultimately, we don't know that it only happened with this case, that that's
mm-hmm.
not a practice of a practice of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there needs to be a letter of, I would support a letter of concern on medical records and documentation, so.
And yeah, I agree. Probably not best policies. A lot of emergency clinics have these flow sheets and these continuous TPRs and this type of thing, and we don't have that. And I agree. I'm not sure it rises to the level of a letter of concern because I think the concern has been outlined here. And based on the responses from the a responsible veterinarian, I think that issue has been addressed.
Okay.
My concern was, I don't know that it just happened with this case.
Mm-hmm.
What I was hearing from the responsible veterinarian is that's kind of the practice.
Yeah.
So what goes, if that's the policy procedure,
mm-hmm.
then to me that's not up to the particular veterinarian in the previous case, it's up to the responsible veterinarian.
Hopefully she's listening in the audience as well. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree totally. Best policy would have been to have more charting by the
yes.
technician
yes.
overnight, for sure.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 24-133. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you both for being here today. We're going to keep moving on. So we're going to go back up to the top. Number one, 2485, in regards to Samantha Lieberman, DVM. Tracy will read me the summary.
Yes. Case 2485, the complainant is Andrew Gonsi. The respondent is Samantha Lieberman, DVM. On December 18th, 2023, Daisy, an 8.5-year-old female Doberman, was presented to respondent for pain, incapacitance, and lethargy. Respondent spoke to the pet owner in the room and discussed the pain medication and appetite stimulant. It was noted that no exam was done on the patient, pending a consult with complainant. The dog was discharged. Later that day, the dog presented to vet med on emergency with clinical concerns of GDV. Complainant approved stabilization and diagnostics. Radiographs were consistent with GDV. And due to financial constraints, complainant elected to humanely euthanize the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the respondent nor the complainant present, and Dr. Nosley, you are the lead.
Okay, this case involves around two issues. One being the concern by the complainant that the drugs were responsible for the GDV, and then this issue about whether an examination should have been done. First of all, the complaint is against the, is inappropriate in terms of the drugs regarding this respondent, because this respondent didn't prescribe any of those drugs. She merely saw it briefly and decided to withdraw some of the drugs, so I don't think she could be held responsible for saying these drugs called the GDV, caused the GDV. In that, regarding that, there is no documentation, or these drugs are not known to cause GDV. We don't know what causes GDV in most cases. It was a multimodal approach to pain management. That's very appropriate. You start with one, you don't get results, you add another. Yeah, that's entirely appropriate. I believe there may have been some confusion. The complainant stated that, well, the on emergency, when they discovered the GDV, they said it was because of all the drugs the dog was on. Well, I think there's some confusion there. I believe they were probably talking about the sedation and some of the problems the dog was having with the drugs, but not that it caused the GDV. But I could see where, in the emotional state, the complainant would say it was the drugs, but I don't believe any veterinarian would have made that statement. So we have this patient, or this matter of the patient not receiving an examination. And I had some questions. Who determined the visit would be a consultation? How was it charged for? And so initially I had those questions, but I really don't think that plays a role in this. There was discussion in the investigative committee about this. The dog was there and didn't get an exam. I've done that many times in my career. Patients, or clients, excuse me, come in and they want to talk about the case and they want to discuss what's going on. And it's no different than a telephone conversation. And you could have that very conversation that went on in that room could have been done on the phone, entirely appropriate. Let's back off the medicines, let's see what's going on, the inappetence. That combined with the fact that at that point in time there was no symptoms that could correlate with GDV. No non-productive retching, bloating, pacing, pain. There wasn't any of that at that point in time. So I don't have a problem with that being a consultation exam or what was done. I would agree with the investigative committee in case 2485 to dismiss with no violation.
Thank you for clarifying some of the consult, the exam, yeah, yes. Because, you know, again, when you see there was no exam, you know,
yeah, sure.
And then it ends up, you know, in GDB later yeah. that day. So, okay, but thank yeah. you. So that helps.
I do have a question after there's a second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2489 or 85. What is your question?
Yes. Could an exam have identified the GDV?
We don't know, because would an exam lead to a radiograph, led to a possible occurring? No, we don't. But in GDV, it happens very fast, and there are symptoms that are very severe, this non-productive retching. They pace around, they can't get comfortable, their abdomen is bloating. None of that was the case. And then we have this period of time from that exam to when the GDV occurred and was discovered. It's kind of, it just happened to be. Could she have done anything? I don't believe so. With that lack of symptoms, and she was there to discuss, it was really, in her mind, a quality of life discussion regarding this mobility of this patient and now the inappetence. So to answer your question, yeah, it can happen that fast.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2485. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Continuing on to 2486, in regards to Brian Petrovsky, DBM. Tracy will read the case summary.
Case 2486, the complainant is Catherine Swalwell, and the respondent is Brian Petrovsky, DBM. On July 21st, 2023, Ridley, a 5-year-old Alcorgi mix, was presented to respondent for an orthopedic consult. The dog was diagnosed with severe degenerative intertarsal medial tarsal instability. A week later, complainant approved the preoperative blood work and transfusiographs. On August 4, 2023, the dog was presented to respondent for blood work and sedated stress radiographs. On September 12, 2023, the dog was presented to respondent for surgery. A bilateral single session partial tarsal arthrodesis was performed and post-operative radiographs were performed as well. The dog recovered with splints on both legs and was hospitalized overnight for continued monitoring. On September 13, 2023, the dog appeared normal with normal vitals and physical exam. Later that day, the dog began showing neurological symptoms. The dog was hospitalized overnight for overnight monitoring. Later that evening, respondent was called with an update that the dog may have had a seizure. Complainant was given an update on the dog's condition. Respondent arrived at the premises at 9:30. At 10:05, the dog had a seizure and was treated with midazolam. The dog was transferred to Animal Medical Surgical Center by complainant. On September 14, 2023, complainant elected to humanely euthanize the dog. Complainant feels that respondent kept the dog under anesthesia too long, and if respondent could not provide adequate care to the dog, she should have sought care elsewhere. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We have Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring only.
Monitoring. And no complainant here. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, so with this case, I totally can understand where an owner may feel that was a long period of time to have an animal under anesthesia, but given the complexity of the surgery that was going on, I would say that if you put any of us in that room, it would be quite a bit longer to do that surgery. So, you know, it was a necessary piece in order to ensure that the surgery was completed. Looking through the monitoring, the pet was stable throughout the procedure, so it wasn't as though there was some incident that they decided to ignore and keep moving forward. There were some questions and concerns. The owner had said that she had asked to not use acepromazine. They did not. In fact, I don't even see it as a drug that they have available in their clinic that they use for medications for surgeries. You know, and then there was some back and forth as to whether or not she had mentioned that her pet was sensitive to anesthesia, but the dog had actually only been neutered, so there wasn't a history of surgeries. The other piece was transportation. So that evening when the dog did have a seizure, in trying to, you know, there was some questions as to whether or not the veterinarian should have provided transportation. He did not provide transportation, but actually went on site to look at the dog and provided some treatment there while she transported the dog. So, and they did send her to a specialty center where there would be a neurologist on staff the next day. The specialists and veterinarians can't necessarily work 24 hours, 7 days a week. So, and being a neurologist, it is a specialty, and there aren't very many of them in the valley. So it's not you're going to find one in the middle of the night to treat this case. So, in the only concern that I had was that the complainant said that she did not get medical records, and I looked through the medical records and I didn't see any communication put in by the staff that they had sent them. I know that that's oftentimes the case, somebody will put a note in. So I don't know if there's a way to confirm that she got those records by board staff, but I, you know, to ensure that that happened, but that wouldn't necessarily be against the respondent, that would be towards the premise holder in that case. Yeah. So in the case of 2486, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Yeah, we don't know, have any idea what happened to this dog.
That video though, I was like, wow.
Yeah, no necropsy. We didn't get, like you said, to a neurologist, so we don't know what happened. the only issue I had in the case was the records, and that would be under, that'd be a different case. So I would, do we have a second?
Yes.
Yes.
So we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2486. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Want to follow, I mean, the complainant's not here today either, so we can't really ask if they got the record, so. Number five is where we're at now, 2490, in regards to Chloe Muir, DBM. Tracy, if you'll read the summary.
Yes. I'm going to receive a post IC statement from the complainant that came just a couple days ago, so it's in your packets. Case 2490, the complainant is Michelle Arsenault, and the respondent is Chloe Muir, DBM. On September 27, 2023, Dominic, an 8-year-old male boxer, was presented to respondent for a dermal mass removal. Upon intake, the dog was placed into a kennel in the treatment area. The dog was removed from the kennel at 8:22. For blood draw, the dog was returned to the kennel. At 9:40, the dog was found unresponsive. Staff removed the dog from the kennel and began CPR. Respondent called complainant and advised her of what was transpiring. Complainant approved 4 to 5 rounds of CPR. After about 18 minutes of no response, respondent called complainant. Complainant instructed staff to discontinue CPR. A necropsy was performed and the findings were consistent with arrhythmogenic right ventricular cardiomyopathy. And the committee concluded that no violation of the veterinary practice act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We have Mr. Stoll here again.
Monitoring only,
okay.
Thank you.
And no complaint. And again, Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, with this case, given that we have a diagnosis of what happened with this dog, and it is a sudden death situation. There's nothing that can tell us when that is going to happen. And you know, it is very unfortunate that it seemed to be right around the time that a blood draw was done. And I know too, reading the necropsy report, you know, mentioning of blood in the trachea around the thymus, but I also don't really think that people realize how traumatic doing CPR can be on a patient and what can happen in that situation. So there was, I think at one point the complainant had said that she was never recommended for the dog to go to a cardiologist, but it did find in the notes. It wasn't at the same time that the pro-BMP had come back, but it was a visit or two later that there was a recommendation for a cardiologist and a dermatologist consult for things. So there was that mentioned. My only concern with this case and how it was handled was the actual CPR itself. And I don't know if the other veterinarians in the room looked at their dosings of their drugs. So for the atropine, it seemed to be a lot lower dose than what I would have considered. I also noted in the record that the dog was listed as 32 pounds, and I'm pretty sure that should have been 32 kgs. So that would have been something, you know, could that have done anything? That's a question mark, given that, you know, we've got an underlying condition that pretty much just caused our heart to stop, and that was going to be the outcome. I know that the complainant also sent information about the genetic testing, and yes, you can be negative, you can be heterogeneous, you can be homogeneous. It just kind of gives you an indication that you carry the gene, and you can only have one copy of the gene and still have the disease and succumb to it. So so in the case of 2490, I would agree with the IC recommendation to dismiss the violation.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2490. Is there any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Now on to number six, 2494, in regards to Don Bachman, DBM. Tracy, go read the summary.
Case 2494, the complainant is Timothy Busta, the respondent is Don Bachman, DBM. On December 11, 2023, Neha, a 3-year-old female German Shepherd, was presented to Southern Arizona Veterinary Specialty and Emergency Center on emergency after eating chicken bones and torn up softballs the day before. Diagnostics were performed. and the dog was stabilized overnight. On December 12th, 2023, the dog was transferred to respondent for the emergency department for endoscopic removal of a foreign body. The endoscopic procedure was performed and respondent recommended that the dog continue hospitalization overnight. Complainant declined hospitalization as he would like to take the dog home. Respondent recommended that the dog stay as late as possible with the supportive care. The dog was discharged later that evening. On December 13th, 2023, the respondent called complainant to check on the dog. Respondent recommended a medication for the esophagus and complainant had no questions or concerns. And the committee concluded that no violation of the veterinary practice act had occurred and it was moved and seconded before dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you. We have Mr. Stoll again.
Monitoring only, thank you.
And no complainants. And again, Dr. Swanson for the lead.
Yes, so with this case, I would say overall there was some communication issues, I feel, but I don't feel like it was on the end of the doctor that is actually listed in the complaint. And looking through the medical record and the procedures that were done, I didn't see any issues with how things were arranged. I think there were some frustrations with the owner, and rightfully so, because I know how I feel when it's my own pet, that the dog did not get the care as immediately as possible. But at the same time, we have to understand, and in an emergency hospital, that there is a thing called triage, and the patients that are the absolute most critical are the ones that are getting the services first. And so sometimes it's a good thing that yours isn't the first one in line. And also on the same vein with an internal medicine specialist, you know, they're trying to fit in this procedure in their already booked schedule. So, you know, it's I did not see anything in this case that was specific to the doctor that was listed in the case. So with that, I would recommend a dismissal of case 2494 with no violation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2494. Is there any further discussion?
Yes, I just wanted to ask Dr. Thompson's comments on the fact that the investigative committee suggested consideration of opening a case against Dr. Knapp.
Can we finish?
Okay.
Sure. Okay. All those in favor of dismissing case 2494, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
And then I think I would like to open a discussion with the fellow board members to see if they would, if they are to in agreement with the IC's recommendation to open an investigation against Dr. Dow in the handling of the case, as well as some communication issues and maybe some not great notes. But I'll kind of leave that open to discussion.
Of all three, please.
Okay, but we still have five, so we're good, right? So we can still vote on it as long as nobody else has to. Okay.
Yeah, I think in Dr. Dow's case, I believe it's what you described as the overall case, I think pretty much explains that things happened. Communication may not have been great, but as the primary clinician involved with the case, I really didn't see any issues with his case management. So I'm certainly not as detailed into the case as you are, but I want, how do you feel about his management?
Well, I feel like communication was a big
sure.
piece of it, and that we may not have set realistic expectations for the owner, and I think that's how we really got here. But does that rise to a level of violation?
That's where I'm at.
Right. And so, you know, I do, in these types of situations, owners are stressed, the doctors are stressed, we might not be hearing what one person is delivering. And so even as much as like the complainant was like, hey, this was the cost if it had to go to surgery. Oh no, that was not even close to the cost if it had to go to surgery, but that was definitely what they heard,
yeah.
right? So I don't know, it's communication. And so many of these come to communication is not necessarily an overall violation. He wasn't rude or condescending in communication. It just wasn't super clear, but again, emergency-type situations and stuff isn't going to.
And he was affecting a referral at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is moving it
moving it forward.
Right, yeah. And I think that, you know, with the IC, they were, I think there was some confusion on who, how the whole system of care was set up, and that, why couldn't you have done the endoscopy? Well, because he's not trained, he's not a board-certified specialist, and that's not his, you know. And so I think there was a little confusion on, like, where his role ended and where the internal medicine began. And the other thing, and so I'm talking my way back from recommending, when actually asked, the owner had stated that, you know, one of their biggest concerns was the cost.
And it was a lot.
Yeah, yes. And so, we have a patient who, yes, did not get the procedure that very moment that it walked in the door, got it 32 hours later or whatever, and had a relatively positive outcome, even though we had, you know, some vomiting issues and illness post, that was likely due to the esophagitis caused by the dog vomiting 20 times before it even got to the emergency hospital, not from the fact that it didn't get in that second for the endoscopy.
Just to add to that, in the communication issue, communication is often adequate but not understood on the part of the complainant. And especially what emotional and extremely cost conscious,
yes.
That's all we're seeing.
Yeah.
Maybe the communication really wasn't that bad. Maybe it was just perceived.
Right.
Bad. So I don't think it rises to the level of us.
Of us opening a case.
Okay.
All right. Well, good discussion. So thanks. And if you guys are okay, let's finish up these last two IARs and then we'll take a break before we go on to our next section. So we are now on number 7, 2495, in regards to Mariana Claris, DVM. Summary.
2495, the complainant is Whitney Wade, the respondent is Mariana Claris, DVM. On January 22nd, 2024, Cindy Liu, a 17-year-old female cattle dog, was presented to respondent for hematuria and not wanting to get up. Upon presentation, the dog was taken immediately to the treatment area, as the dog appeared to be in critical condition. A brief T-fast was performed, and which revealed severe pericardial effusion. Respondent went over the exam results with complainant and her brother. Respondent recommended euthanasia based on the grave prognosis. Complainant signed an AMA form and left with the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We have Mr. Stoll here again.
Monitoring only.
Okay.
Thank you.
And no complainants. And Dr. Byrne, you are the lead.
Yes, so in reviewing the case of 2495 against Dr. Claris, they had provided, you know, a pretty accurate, quick diagnosis of the severe circulatory collapse and pericardial effusion in this case, and I think it recommended the proper outcome. The owners opted to go a different direction and take the pet home, and the veterinarian documented with a form document that it was against her medical advice to take home. So I feel like everything was done appropriately, and I would agree with the investigative committee and make a motion to dismiss case 2495.
Yeah, I mean, she even offered to euthanize it at no cost, if I'm not mistaken. So,
and I mean, we had some complaint behavior that was very irrational and threatening.
Yeah, so. It's probably why they ultimately turned around and were like, I'll get you then, file this complaint.
Exactly.
So, but okay, so we have a motion
second.
And a second to dismiss case 2495. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Then our last one is number 11, 24124, Janika Bergsma, DVM. Probably did not pronounce that right.
Case 24124, the complainant is the Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Janika Bergsma, DVM. At the March 20th, 2024, Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened an investigation regarding respondent conduct with respect to working with an unlicensed practitioner named Ames
Information was received that respondent was sedating horses to enable Mr. Ames to provide to employee services to public horses. Mr. Ames is not a registered equine practitioner of the board as required and was issued a cease and desist in April 2020, which remains in effect. The respondent states that she does not have a professional affiliation with Mr. Ames. The event outlined in the flyer obtained by the board did not occur, and she was not aware that Mr. Ames was invited to participate. This investigation was brought to you, directed to you, did not go into front of the investigative committee.
That's good. Okay, thank you. And Mr. Stoll, you are here on behalf of Dr. Bergsma?
I am.
Okay, do you just monitoring?
Just monitoring moment.
Okay.
She has no relation, professional relationship with this guy.
Okay. And then Dr. Byrne, you are the lead on this one as well.
Yes, so in reviewing the case, it all stems from a flyer that was distributed about a potential a day of combined resources between a farrier, a dentist, and a veterinarian. When you review it, I'm not sure that the doctor, when you look at the form, it kind of would lead you to believe that she was there to assist the dentist, but it doesn't specifically state that, and the dentist used the bullet point of having a veterinarian there just to do the sedation for him as kind of a selling point. If the event didn't happen and if she doesn't have a professional relationship with him, I find it hard to find a violation or move it forward. I think it's a case of where there might be some careful monitoring of who you associate yourself with and allowing the advertisement to have gone out without proofing it might have put herself in a situation that she wasn't expecting. So unfortunately, with it not happening and no relationship, I don't see how we can do anything but make a motion to dismiss it.
I would just like to add that I'm not entirely sure that I believe all of her story and her letter, but that's just my personal opinion. And you know, this particular individual, not the doctor, has been on our radar for a long time. It should just be well known out in the community at this point. So I just hope that she or her attorney will just take this information back, that you know, he clearly has people that are watching him as well and you know, reporting this to us. So I'll leave it at that.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 24-124. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, let's take about a 5-minute break. We're moving right along.